Good morning. Beautiful September morning. And time in life is passing. It's interesting, just within a month, like I found, especially with this podium thing, I'm more aware of it. If this isn't like within the right inch, I absolutely cannot read a word on the page. So I have to like keep inching forward. This wasn't true a couple of months ago. So it's kind of interesting. Welcome, there's some people who are here for the first time, I think from Canada, so welcome. And there's some people I've never met before, and a lot of people I haven't seen all summer. And then a bunch of people that I saw a lot all summer. So hello to everyone. September is just really always such an emotional month. The beginning of the autumn equinox, and today is in fact actually the autumn equinox. And, in so many ways, it's really the season that just reminds us of the impermanence of all things. The color of it is golden. The light seems to get clearer as the wind picks up and leaves are falling. And I actually, for the first time, looked up what the word equinox meant. And apparently, it's that all over the world, day and night are the same length of time, which is apparently not true at any other time except the spring equinox. And I thought that was kind of, I don't know, there's something really interesting about that. This quality of a tension between what is going and what is coming, what is arising, what is dissolving. Emotionally, I think on a personal level, September is always kind of filled with this like poignant mix between regrets and hope, dread, school, work, all of that, the speeding race we're in, and excitement because of just all of those things, a kind of deep melancholy. I always get really sad in September, and yet a kind of quality of aspiration, and so on. And there's just kind of, I think more than at any time of year, it's also my birthday in September, which for me is always the mark of the new year, even though in another way, my birthday, it's one of those days I don't actually pay attention to that much on the day of, but somehow that month is the new year. But so there's kind of a lot of emotions going on, both soft and really intense. And I think in kind of the midst of all of these emotions, it's kind of very easy to be sort of swept into the currents of these emotions. Currents looking backwards or looking forwards. Into the past and into the future. And into, as what Roshi mentioned earlier, as like a little sitting refresher, those trains of thought that just keep taking us anywhere and everywhere except actually where we are. And I think that when we're not really grounded in the present, in this moment, in right where we're sitting, this can lead us into a lot of feelings of anxiety, fear, despair, that are not momentary but can become like runaway trains, actually. I think for many of us, that's what we're doing here, is actually cultivating and learning the ability to actually be grounded wherever we are and in the midst of whatever is going on. I know for myself, when I do start to get lost in regrets about the past, what I may or may not have done or accomplished or what have you, or fears about the future, or just being able to keep up with the speed of this ever-changing culture and world, which seems to be accelerating at faster and faster paces. It's really hard. And this quality of being lost in it is when, in a sense, the demons begin to steer the ship. They're not just riding on board the ship, they're steering the ship. And I think this is what makes this, I'm speaking of the time right now of September, but really it would be any times of difficulty or really when the demons begin to steer the ship, that it makes it kind of equal parts difficult, but really rich, important, vital time to practice. To practice coming back to ourselves in this moment, in this life, in this world, as it is and as we are right now. As Roshi said, in this breath, with this fan, and actually it's really amazing to be able to say with this quiet. You know, it's such a rare thing, like just an hour ago I felt like I was getting an implant, you know, the drill and the siren was so loud, and I guess because I'm sitting, it was like, is this inside my brain or outside my brain? It was that same feeling of like being in the dentist, and you know, it's just like, but actually right now, it's really quiet. So we can tell ourselves that I need to settle down before I can settle down. Like actually, when things get calmer, and I'm feeling a little better, then I'll come practice. And when we're in that space, it's hard to actually see the complete absurdity of that statement. It's actually the effort to settle down that settles us down. Those two things are, in fact, never separate. And this can look a lot of different ways, depending upon what is happening. This quality of what it is to settle down. But whatever it is, it's okay. As Musho reminded us earlier, just open your eyes, open your spine, open your heart, be present, be fully present. To where we are, and it is actually okay. While we're waiting for things to settle down, and we're kind of looking for our lives and ourselves to be like they should be, like we think they should be, we are actually missing them in that act. It's sort of like the opposite of making the effort to settle down is that looking for them to be otherwise. And in that space, it's actually almost impossible for our minds to have any idea what we are actually doing or what we're actually feeling or what's actually going on around us when we're busy somehow thinking that we should be different or what's happening should be different. We're then in this idea that's actually not the same thing as simply what's happening. Inside and outside. We're just so caught up in this grasping and this looking for how things should be. And it's so easy to slip into it. It's like, you know, slipping on a banana peel. Yesterday, I was in my first afternoon, morning teaching back at Kingsborough, and then in the afternoon, I had to get a new phone. And unfortunately, as fate would have it, my phone cracked earlier this week. I dropped it, and for the first time, it's like the face of it is all cracked, and I can still kind of functions, but it's old. It's 4 years old now, so I was really looking forward to getting a new phone anyway, but I've never been one of those people who, like, has to get the phone the day that it comes out. But this week, I was that person. Because I'm trying to read my emails, and it's like this, and actually there's a gap in the glass, and, you know, I'm really kind of in this panic that if my phone dies, like, that's just, oh my God, what could happen? I would be unreachable, no one could reach me, it's kind of unimaginable, really, this feeling of if my phone dies. So yesterday afternoon, I was one of those people who, like, needed the new iPhone 5S, not see the S. And so I knew that if I came into Manhattan, there was no way that, you know, I could imagine there would be lines and whatever. So I figured, well, in Staten Island, no one's going to be, like, waiting to get their iPhone. And I was wrong. I went to the Staten Island Mall, which is not a place in the best of times I enjoy going. And, like, there was this line of people winding outside the Apple store, which is usually like deserted, empty, like a waste field. So, you know, I go in and then I'm like, obviously they're of course out of them. And then I want to order one and they're like, oh, you can't order it. It won't be here until October. And I'm just like, how is this possible? It was like 4 hours after it came out. There weren't that many people, actually. I mean, there were maybe 10 people outside the door, which there is like the line, which is now at 8 o'clock this morning. There was a line 2 blocks long. Around. I mean, it's like, it's mystifying. But because not everybody's phone is cracked. They were like, you can't, not until October. I'm like, why do they say the phone is available up September 20th and they make you wait till September 20th and then it's like not available? And they're like, oh, well, they ran out. I'm like, how could they run out if nobody's even had time to order them yet? I think they make like 5 of them and then they sell out. And I was really, I was really working myself into a state. I just got into this thing with this guy, and then I was like, well, what about A&T? Does A&T have them? Like, he was like, well, I don't know. You should call AT&T. So I'm trying to call AT&T, my cracked phone, to read where there's an A&T, and I can't see, so I'm driving to A&T stores to see if they have the new phone. Of course, they do not have the new. They looked at me like I was crazy. No, we don't. I was like, might another store have the phone? And they were like, oh, we only know about our inventory. We don't know. And, you know, it was sort of like going to Sing Sing prison where nobody knows anything. There's like, so I was just really sort of enraged. I was like in this kind of frantic racing state of somehow I must have this phone because I had gotten really excited that I was going to have my new phone. And I totally had in my mind, you know, just being able to do all these things. Really, I was just, you know, and it was not happening. And it was kind of like this anxiety and this panic, and I was like driving really fast. And then I was getting enraged with Julia because it was when I went to pick her up at the airport earlier in the week that the phone broke. So ultimately, it was her fault and the evil empire of Apple. And if I didn't want the phone so much, I would never get another Apple, you know, anyway, but. So, it just became like a dog, if you've ever had a dog, and they're frantically digging to get a bone, and it was just like, just not pretty. And then I had to come home, because I knew that today was Zazen Kai and I was giving the talk. So I was really in this wonderful space to write a Dharma talk. It was just like, oh God. So I didn't go to the studio. I went home. And then actually as I walked in the apartment, which I never do normally in the afternoon, I'm just never home, it was like, oh, actually, it's kind of really nice. It was really quiet. The light was just so beautiful and really different because I'm only there usually in the morning or late at night. And it just, you know, and I was alone in the apartment and there was just this kind of really very peaceful feeling. And so all of a sudden, I just began to just a little bit settle down, and then I was like, okay, well, let me make myself a cup of coffee. And I had gotten this pine fir incense up in the Catskills, so I thought, oh, let me just calm myself down. I'm gonna just sit on the couch again, not something I ever do during the day. And you know, I'm lucky that there's just, you know, huge window, which is right in front of a tree. There's this tree, like, so it's as if you're in the tree. Just covers the window, and the just these white curtains that you could see through, the leaves were moving and the wind was blowing and the color, and it was just, it was so beautiful. And then the cars would kind of pass, and they sort of sounded like waves in the ocean coming and going. Then I'd drink some coffee, and then a plane passed overhead. And it was kind of like, within 15 minutes, it was like, okay, you know, I could just start writing. It was just settling down. And, you know, actually, I realized that in this moment, everything was just fine. Nothing was missing. Not the new phone and not today's talk. You know, when I was just sitting there on the couch, I could actually, and I just allowed my mind to quiet and settle, you know, from this place. You know, it just kind of becomes like a mirror, and you could just see this craziness that I got into about not having this thing. And like, I could see how somehow I was actually thinking that somehow having this thing was going to make everything in my life all right, as if everything wasn't all right, and as if it wasn't, this thing was actually going to do that. I mean, it was like just having that moment of clear seeing could change everything, you know. And there's a one of the things we chant, the jewel mirror awareness, you know. It's that jewel mirror of just being aware, just letting yourself be quiet and settled enough to just see, without it being good, without it being bad, without it being right, without it being wrong, without figuring it out, or just to simply let it be there. And in that moment, I could also see, you know, in a way, how separated I had become from what actually was right there the whole time. It's not like anything really changed. It's just I had separated myself from, in a sense, the wonder that was there all along, because I was so fixated on this damn phone. So we really need to use our lives and what comes up in our lives to practice. And we have to practice so that we can use our lives. If we don't come here and do this, it's very hard to be able to quiet ourselves down and settle down. And, you know, I have to say, there was something about just knowing that tomorrow, which is now today, I was coming to the Zazen Kai, and I was just going to be back with the pack. And, you know, the activity of having to write a talk, but just the knowing that I was going to be here and this was here waiting, and it changed where I was in that moment. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if any of you have watched The Dog Whisperer, but there's this amazing dog trainer named Cesar Millan, and he really is, like, it's mystifying the way that he's able to work with wounded, particularly wounded dogs. And for the most traumatized and badly wounded dogs, he actually takes them out of the house and he brings them to this compound where they're mixed with all the other dogs. And so there's actually something about being in the group, just being able to be and be with the group, that a kind of healing happens organically. And in that way, you know, that is the power of Sangha, that's the power of practice. We really don't just go off and sit by ourselves and do this, because we then do get lost in our minds, as opposed to just being able to see our minds. They're very, it's close, but heaven and earth apart. Pottery classes just started up again, so I'm teaching a lot of beginning throwing in the last 2 weeks, and beginning is always usually just cylinders, up and down, up and down. And, you know, I noticed that in the beginning, it seems to, people often experience it as almost just some kind of magical thing, like if it goes up or if it goes down or if it goes out or if it goes in. It's as if, in a way, they have nothing to do with it. You know, it's just this thing out there, and you kind of pray and you do your best and something happens, and you know, pretty much all you're looking at is, does it have walls and a hole in it? And if it does, great. And otherwise, it's a blob. And and you know, over time, it's sort of like, in a way, the practice of learning how to make them is as much actually paying attention to and beginning to notice what we're creating and what's actually happening in front of us. You know, is it tall? Is it short? Is it too tight? Or is it too loose? Is it too thick? Is it too thin? You know, is it really symmetrical, or really is it asymmetrical? You know, how is it moving? Is it moving in? Is it moving out? These things are not, these are all the things that we're often not conscious of, but are actually making up this thing that we just can sort of unconsciously look at. And actually, not only are they out there, but we are manifesting these things. And it's not necessarily, that any of these things are right or wrong. They are just the difference in characteristics of what's happening. And in the beginning, we tend to think that whatever it is that we're looking at is completely wrong. If it's thick, it should be thin. If it's short, it should be tall. If it's in, it should be out. Or we can fall into the complete opposite thing and just think, oh, God, well, I made it. That's just great. No, and I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to look at anything more deeply, because here's this thing standing and I made it. It's just great. And that's wonderful for a moment for you, but maybe there's something else there. So there's something about being able to just look and simply see what's there. to just actually notice the different characteristics, and in a sense to inhabit that spot of not knowing that one way is better than another way, to just see what's happening. Because if we're looking and we think that we know this is good, then we know that that is terrible. And when we get into that place, especially when it's related to ourselves, it's very easy to go from this is too thin and it's terrible. It's always thin and it's always ugly because I made it, and that's kind of just what I do, and that's how I work, and that's what I will always do. And, well, I must just be too tight that it comes out this way, and that's just how it is, and that's how it will always be. And it's kind of insidious and unconscious, but that narrative just takes off. And when that's happening, chances are we're going to stop looking at what we're doing, because who wants to see that? Or we're going to just stop doing altogether. And we're going to hide and we're going to withdraw. But for those who can just stay with it and keep looking and be interested and curious by what they're seeing, and so kind of play with it and work with things, responding to all these different qualities, playing with thickness if it's thick, or responding to thinness if it's thin, or just adjusting the activity according to what's in front of us. There's all of a sudden tremendous freedom and engagement, really, in everything that we're doing and every interaction that we're having. And I mean, I think this is really, in a sense, what it is to practice in our lives. Without judging good or bad, just settling into where you are, but really are, not a story of where you think you should be. So that you can actually truly be in this moment, which is really everything that you're seeing, hearing, feeling, all the conditions and relationships of our lives. And in this way, perhaps, we can just respond in a fresh, alive way, really using everyone and everything of which we are part. I just thought I wanted to just read you a little thing of Dogen, who kind of, I think, explains this way amazingly. So it just really hit me. So I just thought I'd share it with you to leave with. So, enlightenment and clarity of the mind occur only in response to the sustained effort of study and practice. Endeavoring in the way ripens the conditions of your practice, which is our whole lives. It is not that the sound of the bamboo is sharp or the color of the blossoms is vivid. Although the sound of the bamboo is wondrous, It is heard at the moment when it's hit by a pebble. Without the pebble. Although the color of blossoms is beautiful, they do not open by themselves, but unfold in the light of springtime. Studying the way is like this. You attain the way when conditions come together. Although you have your own capacity, you practice the way with the combined strength of the community. So you should practice and search with one mind with others.